Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series four of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. Once again, Adam Walker is alongside me, so sit back, relax, and we'll take things from here. This week, we are joined by Andreas Boist, CEO at GCP Service. And also, Andreas, I understand that you are now the president of the Association of International CROs, which I'm hoping we can call ACROS for short, because it's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, let's call it ACROS, and that's correct, yes. As of beginning of September, I have also taken on that opportunity to get my fingers into other sides of the businesses, I guess.
Fantastic. Well, look, I've given a very quick overview there, but look, for those that don't know you, or if you were to, I don't know, meet someone out in public and had to introduce yourself, give us a quick overview of, what you do, the company, and ACROS, effectively.
Yeah, sure. So what do I do? That's, I think, something that's not so easy to say. I always feel ideally a CEO is somewhat redundant to some extent. At least for us, it feels sometimes like that. If everything goes smoothly, everything is fine. So basically, what I try to mostly do, I'm the face of the company. I try to represent it outwards and try to make sure that everything runs smoothly internally and for the company to develop. Mm-hmm. That can take various different forms and shapes. And of course, there's the occasional jump back into my old jobs as a biostatistician or medical writer that I occasionally do here and there, which gives me a lot of joy, but it's probably not in the standard business. So that's usually what I do. I have meetings, I would say. I write emails and I travel around the world. If you want to break it down, most of the things end up otherwise being too complex to go into the details. So
that's from one end of the scale to the other. It's almost like travel around the world sounds very glamorous. Going from meeting to meeting, not so much.
True. It has definitely different shapes, but in the end, I wouldn't even say that meetings are so bad. I think you need to make sure that they have a purpose. But honestly, I've always loved brainstorming with friends, and basically that's what I call meetings these days. They usually have a different set of purposes, but it's if at the end you feel like you have brought something forward, it feels like an accomplishment. If you felt like you have spent an hour listening and you're not quite sure if anything has moved, then I can get why people have a lot of the times the feeling that it's not really like time well spent. So it's finding the balance between the needs and what really brings us forward is some part of it. And in the same way, traveling can be glamorous, but it can also be exhausting. So I guess there's always two sides to a coin. And I can say for myself, I really enjoy what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing. And I think that's the really important thing.
And I noticed that you said that your background was kind of as a biostatistician, right? Which is similar to Adam's line of work, isn't it, Adam? So, I mean,
absolutely.
Just talk us through. So how have you gone from kind of being in that realm to all of a sudden kind of being the CEO? I mean, give us a quick overview, I guess, of how you got into the industry to start with and your background.
All right. So my background is actually in natural sciences. I studied biology at the University of Bremen, did my bachelor's and master's here, and at the end of it was already quite sure I wanted to go into the industry, but wasn't quite sure when and how and where and what I wanted to do. And for sure at that point, the idea was not to join clinical research, but rather, to work in a lab and drive research from more of an industrial sort of like point of view, a little bit more applied rather than fundamental research. Ended up doing my PhD because I felt like this was giving me other options later on down the road. And it happened that a friend of mine that I've met in my bachelor's when I was studying biology had joined GCP Service, a company located close to the university where I was at before. We kept in very close touch. And once I finished my PhD, I was looking for a lot of jobs everywhere, basically in Europe and even outside of Europe. primarily, of course, I was interested also in Germany to stay closer to my wife. At that point, we met up. I had a few drinks with a couple of friends. He was there as well. And he said, I should really try to join GCP Service because they do great work. It's a lot of fun. It's a great team. And if he can do it, I can for sure do it as well. And basically, 2 days later, I got a question from him why I had not yet sent my CV in, because his boss was asking for it. Seemingly, he had pushed the agenda all on his own. A week after I had my interview here, I was sort of like kind of nervous, but I got briefed a little bit in which direction to go. It was kind of wild because I was asked to join as a data manager. And then at the interview, he was like, oh, yeah, by the way, I heard also you like math and numbers. And I was like, yeah, I had planned to study like mathematics during my school. I've worked on a lot of data, big data also big data, I guess, from like biologist standpoint during my studies. I taught some like statistics to my wife during her master thesis in psychology. And so, yeah, I would like that chance. It's like, would you be interested in a dual role? So I joined as statistician and data manager. Got taught on the job, basically learned a lot from like hands-on, like being supervised and said, this is the methodology, read into the backgrounds, get some insights and so on. Moved around and helped organize the department basically because we got a new boss. And he didn't know so much about statistics. So me being in the department, I helped him out in the organizational part, meeting clients, and really there, it helped that I was not a statistician by training, because it meant I had a good knack for simplifying a complex matter. And everything, it's really important to know what you're doing. But for a client, it's really only important for them to know what they need to know to make a decision. And I was good in breaking it down and making sure the client gets the information they need to make the decision. And so somehow it worked. And then second department came to it, and eventually, I don't know, I was 3.5 years in the company, and our CEO said, guys, I retire in 1.5 years. Why don't you take over? And I was thrilled, of course, surprised, thrilled. Now I'm CEO. Sometimes it's hard for me to believe. I'm 5 years with the company, 5 years in the industry, CEO and president of iCross. But, you know, fate is a funny thing sometimes.
Dare I say, Andreas, I think you sound like you're a very humble chap. The skills that you've described are absolutely differentiating. I'd like to say that I'm the reverse of that. In other words, I also simplify the complex, but I'm not a statistician, and I work alongside many highly qualified medical statisticians and pharmaco-epidemiologists and the like. Clearly, there are some skills in you that the previous CEO liked. And I'm thinking that perhaps communication was one of those at the top of the list, because you sound like a very well-informed and a very good communicator on that front. Is that fair?
I hope so. I think so. I think I reflect on that also a lot. I guess it helps that I have a personal coach at home. My wife is a psychotherapist, and I feel like that really helps in rationalizing. I would say I rationalize it. I think she comes more from the emotional point of view, but I really rationalize communication quite a bit, and I just learn a lot from her. I think she really managed to sort of like improve that. I don't think it's, maybe I had a natural knack for it. I don't know. I think I improved a lot during like the last 10 years or so, even during my PhD supervising students. I think I was quite a bit different. I don't know. I'm
Andreas,
sure
you must have a natural knack for it. I mean, you got invited in whilst having a couple of lagers. You know, there's not many people that have, you know, got into the industry that way. Like, you're probably going to be hated after this podcast goes out, because there's so many people that are fighting tooth and nail to get into the industry. Yeah. And when they hear that you went for a couple of drinks with a mate, and the next thing, you're in the industry and now CEO after 5 years, they are going to be gunning for you.
Yes, you're probably right. Yeah, I think it's also like, really, I basically say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. Probably It's definitely, I realize it's a skill to also say no. I think you need to, that really is something you need to learn. And I think a lot of people have struggles doing that. For me, it turned out for the positive because I said just everything, like yes to everything, also along the way. And I think that really helps me through. I'm quite focused. I think I really have no issue like putting myself into the work. And I think I pick up stuff quickly. And I guess I communicate well enough to the point that I can motivate a team to believe into me and to give me a chance. And for sure, GCP Services and our owner and founder, Andreas Grund, is also an extraordinary person for seeing potential in people and giving them a chance to really experiment, make mistakes, and through that process, learn and move forward quickly. So I think in a lot of other companies with the same skill sets, I wouldn't have had the chance. So I don't know if you would attribute it to luck. I think there's a mixture of luck and work and opportunity that came together. And yeah, here I am.
Dare I say, it sounds quite unusual. I know you're based in Germany. I've also worked extensively in Germany. And it tends to be a fairly conservative environment where people are not risk takers. So you're not that Germanic, dare I say it. Yes. And neither is the management style of the company by the sounds of it.
Yes.
Is that also fair and reasonable?
Yeah, I think for sure. Yeah, I would definitely say that I can't imagine being in another company that would have taken the same approach. And actually, there are many reports on Germany has like a wide range of like mid-sized companies or like, well, actually small companies where the owners sort of like lead the companies. And there's a severe issue with handover of these companies because the old owners have trouble handing over and deciding it's now a good point and to allow for someone else to also step in and take their place. And even at the ages of 60s and 70s, like the owners go out and 2 years later, they come back in. And eventually, you know, you have a business that stops functioning because it's just not feasible anymore. And so for us, really, Andreas Grund, who is the owner of the company or like one of the owners of the company, but the founder of the company, is really extraordinary in allowing for that to be different in his, I mean, he's 50 and he says, I hand over now. It's not that he's like 70 and says, okay, you know, this is it. He has many more years in which he and a vested interest in clinical research, but now he's just like, no, I'll do consulting and it's time for a new generation to take over. That is, you know, has it brings different perspective that may be able to gel better with the new generation of employees coming in. And that's really, yeah, a rather unique perspective on work. And that is hugely inspirational also for myself.
I think we should have him on next week, James.
We'll have to try and get into that yes. mindset. I mean, Andreas, I mean, one thing that, look, can I ask you a weird question here? Because I guess looking at this, it almost seems a little bit surreal. As I say, I speak to people all the time who are just fighting to get into the industry. Mm. In your position now as CEO, would you perhaps do the same thing? Would you like on yourself, if you were to analyze yourself and say, should I give this guy a shot? Because there's like, I have arguments day in, day out, you know, experience versus transferable skills.
Right.
You name
right.
it. You know, you can go back and forth forever and a day, probably in your local pub that, you know, we'll be talking about for forever. what's your perspective on that?
I had basically, for me, it was quite clear around already 2 or 3 years ago that I wouldn't have hired myself, like plain and simple as that. Mm-hmm. I think it was a huge risk for that to be the case. And I think the reason why it was done was probably more that the idea, sure, basically getting someone trained into data management, no problem whatsoever. Statistics, I think, is sort of like one of these areas where it is a good idea to have someone that really did at least 5 years of training in, and then you bring them into the industry. And so here, I feel like maybe it is a bit too much of a risk to take on a regular basis, because I think you will have a lot of misses with that approach, only statistics specifically. But I think that just means we need to work so much harder to give other opportunities to the people. And we do a couple of things. One, I also, and for some years now, give some lectures to the biostatistics master's course at the University of Bremen. to give an insight into the industry and to give them opportunities afterwards to come and do an internship, because it's quite different from like learning it and applying it. And so we want to grant that as much as possible.
You're spot on there. I think that that's sometimes the thing, and the argument that I have is that sometimes you don't know what you don't know. You know, yes. Everyone, you could be the most ambitious, driven person in the world, but motivation, just it doesn't last.
Yes.
You know, you've got to have that discipline, and you only really kind of develop that, in my opinion, and sometimes it's very unpopular, with experience. And that's why, you know, my whole life I've concentrated on employing experienced people, because I know that that's typically the hardest thing to find. So it's good that you're almost, seems like you're an advocate of that yourself, despite the fact that you were the opposite, and but that you're also now trying to give opportunities in another way.
Yes, and that thing, I wouldn't quite agree with that statement. We hire and actively try to provide opportunities to a lot of people that have zero experience in the industry. And actually, I now, which I had hoped someone would have done for me, also go into my old masters, the biology masters, and tell them about clinical research. Not to tell them, go and become a statistician. I think that's not the right message. I tell them, there's an opportunity, but the chances are slim. But I go and tell them there are many, many other opportunities you can have as a CRA, as a data manager, as whatever, with remote clinical data monitors, as a TMF manager, as, you know, a trainee and regulatory. There are so many opportunities for you to get into the industry. Okay, not so many opportunities, but if someone takes a chance on you, these are the points where they can really train you from the ground up. And we are willing to give you a chance. And I tell them also, if you have 3 month break in the summer, whatever, or maybe just some exams, come apply for an internship, have a look at whether this is something you can see yourself in. If not, well, you earned a small buck during the summer, you have made some experiences, you can put it on your CV, and you go on your merry way, and you stay in research, maybe do something in the lab afterwards. But maybe it opens the door to something else for you. And this is really where I think you're quite right. If you don't know what you don't know, there is such a huge barrier of entry for people into clinical research. I didn't know it existed, although a friend of mine worked in a company like that. And I knew he was working here. There was something he was doing. I wasn't quite aware of it. And we are all, at the end of the day, we are all patients. It concerns all of us, but no one really knows. And so really working on spreading the word and decreasing that barrier of entry and increasing accessibility to clinical research is something really at heart for me, because I find so much joy in it. And we really could use an influx of young, fresh people that would really be interested in picking up this and sort of like carrying the next generation of clinical research and bringing in new ideas, new concepts on how to really run it in a new way, in a way that improves all of our lives. And that cannot be behind, like, and you're either in or you have no idea that there is even an in to be in.
Mm.
Andreas, you're preaching to the choir. This is exactly what I've been doing for a number of years now with my alumni at the University of Greenwich, where I studied. I studied pharmaceutical sciences, and I also feel very passionate about bringing people into this industry, because, like you, sometimes you just don't know. You don't know how to access those doors.
Yeah.
And what I've been telling students at not just at the University of Greenwich, but various schools that I go out and speak to as well on the same subject. You know, the last couple of years have transformed clinical research, as we know.
Yeah.
We are living through the largest clinical trial that there ever has been. And that's one of the first things I say when I stand up in front of people is, you know, there is an opportunity out there. If you like maths, if you like science, and these are the sorts of things that interest you, there are so many opportunities out there now as an intern, as just a, you know, come along, see what I do. Sit in on a couple of my calls. You know, I've got two grown-up teenage kids. They're not passionate about clinical research, but they certainly know what I do, and so do all their friends, because I bore them senseless every time I see them. But I think, you know, being an advocate and an evangelist for your profession and for clinical research more widely is so important, because, as you say, the barrier to entry is really the not knowing. It's breaking down those preconceived ideas that actually you have to be of a certain level. You have to have a PhD. You have to have I haven't got a PhD. I haven't got a master's. I worked hard. I got a good degree, but really, you know, I'm nowhere near as academic as anyone I'm sat in a room with at any point. But what I am is passionate about clinical research and making a difference to patients, people, my family, the people around me. And I think that's absolutely what you're speaking to. Yeah. And there is that common thread that runs through all of us that are working in this industry. And I know James has experienced that firsthand as well when he's looking at candidates, but certainly, you know, someone fairly new to the industry as well over the last few years. I know, James, that's been similar experience, hasn't it?
Indeed, it has. I think it's, yeah, I guess I wasn't aware of, you know, the whole barrier to entry and struggles that people go through, but now I do. And it's a daily discussion for me. But look, Andreas, coming back to yourself here and GCP service, look, how does it look now? So look, you got promoted through the ranks fairly quickly. You were clearly good at what you did. I think it's pretty evident that, you know, your communication skills are, you know, up there. What does life look like now? What is GCP? What's the focus? Like if you were to explain the business model, what you do, the clients you help, how you do things.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess at this point we're mid-size, and I think this is also, I guess, the biggest change here. I think we've outgrown sort of like the small business, like family owned stuff. Sure. Well, now we are still owned, privately owned. We are like 110 people in 7 locations. And we run clinical trials full service, basically. So we support any type of client, really, be it like, you know, biotech or big pharma or small medical device manufacturers, even investigators for their IITs. But where we think we can be best and where we are most passionate about is sort of like making a difference and really working together with clients on an eye-to-eye level. And we feel that that's mostly the case with like small to mid-sized companies, because there are a lot of them that have great ideas. And honestly, they are already technically in the industry, but even for them, there's still a huge barrier if they want to get their product to the market. Sometimes you want to run global trials and you cannot do it because the big CROs, they will not even look at you because you're too small, or you would just need to align in and say, I basically give complete liberty to you to run the trial as you wish, and I need to pay a huge sum for it. And so where we think we are best suited for the people we work with, if we can come up with some custom tailored solution to a clinical trial with a small budget that just needs going. And a lot of medical device manufacturers, of course, are on average less than 10 people, sometimes only 3 to 5, have no idea of clinical research, and we can really make the difference between the product getting to the market or not to the market. And this is what we are very passionate about, but we can also run global international clinical trials from basically a concept idea, we can take it all the way to a clinical investigation report. And we are really experts in running clinical trials. We are not experts in a certain indication. We have some with which we have extreme amounts of experience simply based on the projects we have run. But we have run in more than 30 different indications, and again from drugs from phase 1 through 4, medical devices pre-post-market, IVDs, non-clinical trials, registries, everything basically. And at the core of it, we always understand that the client knows the product the best, and where should we then add value? And this is in really running a smooth operation and getting the results in a lean manner. And sometimes we can really be the make or break point for projects to be run or not. And this is where we're really passionate about them, making these trials also accessible then to our customers. And, yeah, that's us as a company, basically.
You touched on it there about kind of this eye level and being able to give people with smaller budgets access to running trials, etc. But also on a global scale. Now, I'm getting the sense that this is perhaps where the ACROSS comes in. So, look, yes. To explain that business model, because when I actually came across it through George Adam, yes. George Zafaris, who was on the show not so long back.
Yeah.
So they're part of the ACROS as well. So, I mean, could you just, like, for the general audience, explain how it works, what the setup looks like, and I guess the benefits that brings? Because I really like this model. I'm a big champion of, like, smaller to mid-sized businesses, as I regularly say. So, you should give us a quick overview of this side.
So, in the end, for us to be of the highest benefit to our clients, we should run the trial where it can be run the easiest. And that is, I mean, we have our headquarter in Germany, but we know that for a number of trials, Germany is not the best location to go to because patients may not be as willing. We have sometimes complex regulations, especially like when radiations come in and you need to wait another half year for it to be approved. At that point, why would we ever recommend to a client Germany other than because we are located there? And that makes no sense. So the idea is to go where the patients are and where trials can be run efficiently. And it's clear that as a small company at that time, and even still small to mid-sized now, we cannot cover the globe on our own. And doing it through, like, you know, basically hiring vendors, other companies, makes it difficult to have like a full trust and a really speedy startup process as well. And this is where ACROS comes into play, because these are not like vendors for us. These are long-term partners. ACROS, of course, exists already for a number of years. And it's other like-minded CROs that work together, all small to mid-sized, that have like their local knowledge, that understand how clinical trials are run in their regions. And they can help us facilitate these trials where they are, and we can have them facilitate the trials where we are. And so together, we can suddenly span the entire globe, but still at the same mid-sized sort of like feel to the operations, the same flexibility and the same leanness of the budgets, and still with the mindset, we are not a big CEO, we will not dictate how the studies run, this is still your baby, and we will just help you take the first steps to market entry. We don't want to take it away, we are here to support. And we take care of you even if your budget doesn't necessarily have like 8 digits. So this is sort of like where it comes into play.
Andres, is there anything else like this? Because when I heard about it, I was like, makes sense. Like it seems like a good option to me. And I just thought, you know, when I heard ACROS, I was all of a sudden, my eyes lit up, because I was like, oh, you know, this will be a ton of potential clients for me. I'd love to speak to all of the CEOs and start recruiting for them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But it doesn't, I mean, there's not too many members just yet. Is there other associations or groups that work in a similar way, or is it unique?
I mean, there are other associations, but I mean, we go quite far in terms of how closely together we want to work, with common trainings, with common orders of one another, with sharing like financial oversight, so that we know how well off everyone else is doing and that there is no like financial risk and burden to it. Wow. With like a common code of conduct, with a common quality umbrella. So it is moving a step beyond just these our partners and sort of like forming really a group that is really tightly knit. Mm-hmm. We meet on a regular basis, we have exchanges, we try to move forward together, we try to share knowledge between us. In more of an approach that together we are stronger than each individual company can ever be. And you need really the spirit of wanting to give to the group so that the overall, like the whole group can grow. And in a lot of associations, you're just members to try to shape as a group something outwards, but you still keep to yourself. It's my processes, it's my budgets, it's my numbers.
Yeah.
And maybe you know someone, but you don't like... We are super happy to hand over a project to someone else if we feel like they can be of higher value. Again, we do need to run studies in Germany if they can be run in Spain or in Israel or in Australia or in India. Mm. If they are better suited for these regions, we don't stick to it. And if everyone in the group has the same mindset, that's good. But it's counterintuitive, because in the first place, you're losing some money. But in the long run, if you have the sort of like long-term goal of the overall group will grow, if everyone has the same mindset and everyone wants to see the group grow, then it's going to work. And this is really where I hope and we hope that with ACROS we can make a difference, and where we are also continuously trying to get new parties in. And sometimes it just doesn't work out as well, because you can have the mindset of, I want to be part of it, but I don't want to give, I'm here to receive. And that will not work. And that makes it difficult to move like into a bigger space. So it needs to be really, it needs to be a meeting on eye level and everyone needs to pull in the same direction, else it doesn't work. And that means it's not about getting 30, 50, 100 different organizations in, but rather we need the select few that really have the same mindset and want to move in that direction. And this is a process that takes time. And of course, iCross is also somewhat young. We want to grow by a member a year, if that's possible. More, of course, if there's an opportunity, but that's really to be seen.
I like it.
Andreas, it sounds fascinating. And having worked in this industry for 20 odd years, I don't know many CROs that like sharing their business. They're very competitive by nature. And I just wonder how you've overcome some of that in your earlier conversations. Because, as I say, it doesn't sound like the kind of companies that perhaps I've been working with for all these years. Maybe I've been working with the wrong CROs, but certainly if I think about the top tier, you know, your top tier CROs, I don't think we're talking about the likes of IQVIA, Parexel, LabCorp, etc., Syneos Health, any of those. What's curious to me is how you get around the table and how you decide to divide the pie, because I know there's lots of thumbs in lots of pies, and it's really, really challenging at the best of times when it comes to vendor management and deciding who gets their piece of the pie with regards to, let's say it's, I don't know, pharmacokinetics, labs, any of those analytical services that sit alongside. I'd just love to hear a little bit more about that.
Okay. Yeah. I think it is relatively simple in the regards that in the end, if a project gets to us, and at least some of the like countries or so that we work with are involving Germany or whatever, we will still do it. Otherwise, I mean, we have a partner. For example, let's say a client comes to us, wants to run a study. We say Israel is the best candidate for it. There are two options. Either we immediately forward it to Israel and say, you do everything. Or if we feel like we can be of added value, we can say, for example, it's something we are quite familiar with, so we can do basically the entire backend, TMF, whatever, stats, data management, and so on. And we contract our partners for local submissions, local monitoring. And this is how we share a piece of the cake, but the primary piece of it stays with us. If the client goes to our partners in Israel and they say, we need Germany and Czech Republic on board, these elements, local project management, regulatory submissions in Europe, and monitoring is outsourced to us. So really, a lot of the sharing is done on this local knowledge and local monitoring. So regulatory submissions as needed. In Europe now, we have a unified system, of course, at least for drug studies. And this monitoring where really you need on-site personnel. So a lot of it is sharing operational business in terms of monitors and regulatory, sometimes local project management. And the core remains with the contracting party, so the one that was approached first. Sometimes also people go to iCross directly, but that happens, I guess, less frequent. And basically they contract through iCross. And then it's about sort of like who manages that and how is it shared and where does it make sense.
So if I'm a pharma company and I come to iCross,
yeah,
do I have to do a vendor audit for all of the different vendors or do I come to one? How does that work?
So basically, the idea is always it should be as easy as possible for the client. So they have to basically audit one, or rather they can just audit iCross. And we, of course, have a quality management system in place. And every member of iCross is audited every 2 years. Nice. Like a usual vendor would be there. So as long as iCross is vetted properly, the client should come to the conclusion that we have good processes in place to make sure that everyone in iCross that is contracted works at the expected level. And so they no longer need to do it, and it's basically outsourced. And it's one point of contact, one point of basically approach. And then we see how it goes. So for example, if you were to approach iCross as a president, I could act on sort of like behalf of it. If you say you want to run a trial in the US, I would go over to our US partners and tell them, look, this is coming here. Let us get involved in there. If it's in Europe, we could take care of that. Again, if it's in India, we would go to our partners there. And so this is sort of like how it's divided. We don't have partners in the same region, basically, for in most of the cases. And otherwise, it's quite strictly organized. So we have
it's
a
always mutually beneficial in that sense, isn't it? Because it's kind of where you're strong, others may well not be. And it's that kind of collaborative approach of, look, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go as a group.
Yeah.
Like it's such an interesting one. When I heard about it, I was just like, I was almost, it seems to not make sense, but oddly does make sense. And I was kind of like, why is there not more collaborations like this? But I think, you know, even just from a hiring perspective, I know that it's tough to find people with the right attitudes, you know, mindset to match with the existing team. Mm-hmm. Doing that across multiple companies and all coming together like that must have been tough. So look, fair play for the fact that you've managed to get that together, and it's now
again all you know, Lauris, do we say that? All cheers go out to Andreas Grund, because he co-founded it, initiated it. I'm now sort of like taking over the mantle for both of these, because for us it's instrumental to have a higher value to our clients to have Icros on board, so therefore I jumped into that position as well. But really it is, he's just a really inspiring person, I guess, that managed to convince these people to say, you know, together this really has an advantage.
It really is impressive. And I guess that brings me on to my next question, really, which is, how do you feel about stepping into those shoes? Because it sounds as though they're pretty big shoes to fill. And look, by your own admission, you've not been in the industry for forever, by any means. It sounds as though you've got a good mentor very close to home in your wife. So how are you dealing with this? Because, look, you know, imposter syndrome often hits us all at times. So how are you dealing with stepping into these shoes? What mentors do you look at to guide you on this sort of stuff?
I was quite clear for myself that I do not need to fill the shoes. And when we sort of like spoke to our company at a summer party as well, this is also what I made rather clear. Sure, I am following up on him. I am taking over the same role, but I am not him, and I will not be acting the same way that he does. I have a lot of ideas that are similar and have a lot of ideas that are different. I think there are strong sides in him. Of course, he has much more experience in the industry than me. And there are some things that I'm sure I can do maybe better, for sure different than him. And there is a reason why he's asking me to sort of like step in his place. So
definitely.
I don't know if I am 100% like honest with myself, but I've reflected on this a lot, and I feel no pressure in achieving any form of comparison to him. I want to carve my own lane, and that makes it very comfortable for me, because I know I will make mistakes. I know I will make decisions that he would have never made, that maybe could be avoidable, that leads to worse outcomes. All of this is possible, but he sort of like instilled this idea of going out, and it's more important to do and make mistakes and learn from them than to be afraid of doing something and committing like an error that cannot be repaired.
I love that mentality.
Yeah. So I think it's really just like this years, few years that I really worked with him and very intensively, of course, also over the last couple of years. It was very clear at every step of the way that there is trust there, and that no matter what, there is a team that has my back, and there is still a team that has my back. And even now, I wouldn't have accepted it. I don't think I would have been courageous enough to accept it, quite honestly, if I had the feeling I would sit here alone. But I have an extremely nice team around me that really supports me where I know I have my weaknesses, and I can support them where I know I have my strengths. And that makes it very easy for me somehow to really be comfortable moving into this position and say, I am here for a reason, and I can do good, and I can move the company forward. And there will be hiccups along the way, and it's fine, because this is the nature of moving forward. If everything goes smoothly, it just means you're not courageous enough to take the next step. And so I'm honestly
quite absolutely, absolutely loving that. And look, what are the plans then that you've kind of got in mind? Because I guess when you've grown with the company, we've all been there. We've all had thoughts of, look, I would like to do things like this, or I would like to change X. You know, what are the plans for GCP service, for iCross? What do you envisage, and what are you planning to implement? How's that going to look over the next, I don't know, year, 18 months?
Yeah. So for me, it was quite clear that with the change in leadership at GCP service, there were a couple of changes that were relatively impactful this year and still happening. It was clear for me that we will have a little bit of a tumultuous year, at least changes for the better, but there are still changes, and changes always come with hiccups along the way. So for me, it was quite clear I needed to address a lot of internal things and stabilize, especially for the team, because that's the most important part, the company the next year. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are growth plans. We have grown from like the beginning of the pandemic to now. Basically, we had 2 offices. Now we have 7. So, and we grew by 30% in terms of employees. So we have already grown quite a lot. And so now it's really important with the shift in mindset from, like, you know, family owned basically to now we have someone else directing the flow of the company as a CEO and no longer like the owner of the company. From being small to now mid-sized to multiple offices, that requires a lot of structure to it. I need some stability and some structure and some order. And I know that sometimes in the past, we were moving a little bit too fast also for ourselves. So really stability in the next year is really important. And at the same time, while this is sort of like being worked up and that doesn't need to automatically be on my plate, move forward to building up to the next steps. But we need the stability. We cannot just grow. We just outgrow ourselves because we have grown a lot, and that needs this stability. And then for sure, the best way we can serve clients is to be where the patients are, where we can be efficient. So, and that can be either processes. We use a lot of tools and we develop a lot of tools for ourselves. We are continuing to do that on a like technological side to just streamline everything that we do. But also regions and countries that we can look into. And we have a couple of plans, a couple of ideas where we would like to be, and where we think there is a lot of potential and a lot of unmet need that we can cover. And this is both on GCP service level and on ACROSS level, where I think there are opportunities. Some markets are tough to enter. China is one which we don't deal with too intensively, but it's quite large and, of course, has a large industry behind it as well. Mm-hmm. South America is something that is quite interesting as well, but probably not as easy, I would say, as a region to really conduct clinical trials. It's just a regulatory process can be quite a nightmare. And these are just things we need to consider, like does it match in terms of mentality and in terms of growth? But if so, and if we really get a good like entry into these countries, I think that can be quite beneficial for a number of people that we can work with. And that's really it. Other than that, spread the word, really. And so continue what we're doing. We have a YouTube channel that is at just over 8,000 subscribers, where we share a lot of like free content on how is it actually like being a CRA, what are things you need to consider, how are clinical trials run. I think that's really important because it's a media that I think a lot of younger people can have more access to. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm like very old at 34, but it's still I think it's good to make it like digestible, help people get into it, spread the word, try to be useful, honestly. That's
Wow. Well, it sounds like there's a lot to unpack there. It sounds like exciting times. Yeah. And I mean, sitting here with my recruiting hat on, there's perhaps a couple of people I could perhaps introduce there, but I'll save that for another day. We'll not bore everyone with that right now. But look, we will keep an eye on this, most definitely. I think it'd be great to get yourself back on the show, perhaps Andreas Grund as well, perhaps on the show, because I just love the sound of ACROSS and what it's all about. But look, before we close off for today, we always finish the show with a quick fire question round, Andreas. Yeah. So look, I'll kick us off and just ask, you know, what would be the one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self, perhaps pre going to the pub and landing this gig?
Okay. Honestly, I feel quite blessed. I think it's also one of my superpowers. I was super positive. I think I'm where I'm supposed to be. But I would say just stay relaxed. Things will fall into place. And if anything, pick up some financial tips, because that's clearly the part I need to work on the most, like with through the transition from really very hardcore scientific part for many, many years. Managerial part needs a lot of more fine-tuning. It's easy to pick up because it's also a lot of numbers, and I really love numbers. I am not afraid of spreadsheets, but I think there is just, I think, a fundamental understanding that if I had worked into a little bit more earlier and made more of a routine, I think that would be the one thing I would say, like, maybe you can use it down the line.
Definitely.
I have to observe, you have such wisdom for one of the age that you say that you are, Andreas. It's clear to me that not only is your wife a very strong advocate for you, but she's clearly a sounding board, and she's given you an awful lot of free therapy, because you have the insight that it takes years to gain. Let me tell you, you know, as someone who's done a lot of that myself. So that's what I'm listening and hearing out for. And the clues are in all the language that you use and the way that you describe it. And I've seen James nodding all the way through, because he knows exactly where I'm coming from as well. our listeners love to know what books or resources are on your bedside table. Aside of obviously having that friendly ear of your wife, what other resources do you go to regularly?
Yeah, at the moment, and for some time, and I think also most influential for me, is I had read all the books of Simon Sinek a couple of years back. I really love it. It was actually a recommendation from Andreas Grund for me to pick up. And yeah, Start With Why, I think, resonated a lot with me. And it is something, maybe not in its core, but this idea of why is really something that's quite stuck with me on a lot of elements. Basically, in every meeting I go in, it needs to be quite clear for me, why am I here? And then we can discuss the what and the how. But this is really where it starts. And I give a lot of trainings. And so that's also the first thing. Why should people attend the training? With that in mind, I can tailor it much more to the person that's attending, because it's not for me to talk. I can always do that, and I love talking about my work, but it should be addressed to the audience. And so if you have that in mind, I think, like, why you do something is quite easy, and it makes it easier to communicate it as well if you're really conscious about that in your day-to-day. So this really resonated a lot.
I love his work, but also, funnily enough, I was having a message with someone today, and I used that phrase. I said, what is your why? Know your why. Because he bangs on about that all the time, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If you know your why, then you know what you're getting out of bed for in the morning.
Yeah.
Great. 100%.
Thank you.
100%. Definitely. Well, it seems like you've already increased headcount a bit. There's going to be some stabilizing now, as you've kind of just had. But in terms of when you're growing your team and those that you surround yourselves with, you know, we've had a bit of an insight as to that with the ACROS level, really. But what are the three qualities, Andreas, that you value most when putting together your direct team?
Yeah. The first thing is they need to have a tangible interest. And it's funny enough, because you would think that this is extremely easy. Everyone has something that they are like passionate about. And I'm not talking about anything work-related. I'm just... In interviews, something I'm trying to get in out of a first meeting, I say, I don't want to talk at all about the specifics of what you did before. Sure, I'll ask you what you've done, your experience, and whatnot, but I don't want to hear about, I have used, I don't know, been part of these studies, or this is the specialization I was in, this is additional work. No, I want to know what sort of gets you out of bed in the morning, what gets you interested, where are you even at 11 o'clock at night, when you're about to go to bed, if someone calls you up and says, let's do this, you're going out to do that. Like, this is something I would like to know, because it tells me a lot about what, how a person can motivate themselves if they're really interested. And then I can understand if I can dial that passion also towards the work and put them in a place where they do something they really like, I know they will succeed. Mm-hmm. Because we try a lot. Sometimes it can be moving pieces always, because we want to put people into a work position where they really do what they like, because then they'll do good. It makes no sense if I've hired someone and they do something that they don't like, then it will show in their work. So if they have this internal motivation, it's great. And often enough, I don't see that. Or people like I feel like you should go to work for something more than just a paycheck. And so if you have something in your private life that you're really passionate about, and I can feel that you can transfer this passion to me, I know we are on the same wavelength. That's a little bit of a mindset thing like this. Yeah, that's really important to me. I also look at positivity in them and in a service mindset, really. Mm-hmm. Because service starts with your colleagues and your team members. It's not even about the client. It's not about us being a service provider. So I need people that do that. But if you understand that you can, if you like being of help to another human being and your colleagues, this is great and I need it. I don't want the people of like a team of people that look for themselves first. I need someone that is willing to sacrifice for the team. And if I have a team of these people, and that's hard to do, then I have someone that I can fully trust and I can be fully hands off with. And so these are the like really completely hands off anything like work related that I look forward in people.
Cool. Yeah.
Amazing. Like I said, you keep banging on with such wisdom. It's incredible. On a personal level, what's your favorite thing outside of work, Andreas?
Well, I mean, obviously spending time with my wife. I have to say this now, but really, she's my better half and my soulmate. But that's a cheesy answer. So I would just say at heart, I'm actually quite a nerd. And so two things that I really, really enjoy and that I will also get up at midnight out of bed for are board gamings and Dungeons and Dragons. So maybe something you wouldn't quite expect, but it's something that really long strategic board games, full weekend for one game. It's something where I lose complete touch with anything work related and I can really completely zoom in. And I can get my strategic mind going quite a lot. And I found so much pleasure in that. And yeah, so
these are the first for us, Andreas. It's a first. There's been a few firsts on this one. And look, to close the show then, look, what would you summarize as your number one golden rule for both life and business? You know, it seems things are going well. So if you could sum that up kind of short and succinct for us.
Wow, that's a deep question. Goal for life and business, you say?
Correct.
Okay. I think I would definitely separate the two. So goal for the business is...
Oh, sorry, golden rule in life and business.
Golden rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your secret sauce? How do you stay calm? How do you... Yeah. Where does this mindset come from? Give us, give us that insight. That's what we want to hear.
So it comes from, I would say, probably... So it comes from a postcard that was standing in the kitchen of our house all the time. And my parents are not religious, but it was basically, it's of course a German postcard, but it basically said, God, give me the strength to change things I can change, sort of like the acceptance of things that I cannot change and the wisdom to separate one from the other. And I think this really is my golden rule basically throughout. I think it makes it extremely easy to move through life if you practice this on a regular basis of just saying, I cannot change it, I move on. And saying it and believing it are two different things. If you truly believe it, then you can truly move forward. And that makes life a lot easier because sometimes there are so many things you can be mad about and angry about, and that will take away from your own life, from your own happiness, from your own fulfillment. And if you just say, I cannot change it anyway, let's move on, then I think it just gets easier. But also, find the strength in yourself to tackle these things if you can truly change them and your life will be richer for that.
I like it. Andreas, I'm going to have to hire you as a life coach, I think.
wise. The wisdom is just unbelievable.
I love all of that. Yeah, it's
incredible.
Control the controllables, you know, don't worry about the past.
Don't sweat the small stuff.
So look, for anyone looking to reach out to you, I know that there's the YouTube channel, GCP right. Service. Right. You're active on LinkedIn. What is the best way to reach out to you, learn more about GCP Service and ACROSS?
Yeah, honestly, LinkedIn is the best source. And it's not even only about business. I think, again, it is so hard to get into this industry. And I think it's really good to just have someone, you can just pop a question. And I say it because I mean it. If there are things that, especially people that have like no idea about sort of like the industry, if there is a specific questions also that you would like to ask some insights, I'm always like, just pop a question. You can like just reach out to me, send a message, invite. I'm happy to connect and chat about it. That's even way outside of business or any interest in that. I think we need that. We need more people to do it, and I'm really happy to share what I know. And sure, it's not going to be like, I need an essay on this, and can you write it for me, or can you give me all the information, or what do I need to do to get into the industry? These are like quite vague questions, of course, and sometimes hard to answer. And but a lot of times people have like really dug into the matter, but are still stuck and would like to see sort of like a move forward. And I think, yeah, I'm just open to connect, to share. I think in the end, we all are better for it. So reach out.
You're a top man, Andreas. I'm sure that'd be welcome. But look, thank you very much for being a guest on the Huxley Morton podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It was indeed. Thank you so much for having me, for inviting me. It was the first podcast I was on. I knew from our first discussion that it was going to be a fun one. Thanks for having me, picking my brain, and happy to connect again. And if you want a connection to Andreas Grund, I'm happy to make it happen.
Good man, good man.